today on this wonderful, beautiful day. We would first, okay, let's start with the introductions. Ben, we will start with you back there in the corner and then just come forward and then over into this area.
Great. Ben Westrich with Moss Head Front Regional Council staff.
Joe Taylor, UTA.
Ted Knowlton, WFRC.
Jacob Sland, UTA Capital Development.
Jeff Oiler, Davis County.
Barry Burton, Davis County.
George Tenera, Salt County Townships and Cities of Salt County.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front staff.
Bert Mackey, Utah Department of Health.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Bill Applegarth, Griffin City.
Scott Hess with WFRC.
Jory Johnner, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
Jeff Silvestrini, Mill Creek.
Phil Sarnoff, Lake Utah.
Jennifer McGrath, UTA.
Charles Ewart, Salt County.
Ellen Peters, Salt Lake County, Planning and Transportation in the Office of Regional Development.
Angela Papastamas, UDOT Planning, representing me today.
Dan Mergenthal, Salt Lake City.
Jim Prismack.
Tim Hart, Torox Engineers in Green Bay.
Mark Benigni, Weaver Pathways.
Brian Moore, Riverton City Engineering.
Elliot Vaught.
Tom Millar, Alta Planning and Design. Ned Hacker, WFRC.
Michael Mason, WFRC staff.
Gary Bennett, Utah County Health Department.
Julia Titmus, Utah County Health Department.
Travis Wilson, Weber Morgan Health Department.
Tom Zimbardo, Salt Lake County Planning.
Marcy Clark, Davis County Health Department.
Sarah Hodson, Utah County.
Brandon Smith, Utah Legal Services.
Melissa Sperry, Salt Lake County Health Department.
Emily Price, Salt Lake County Health Department.
Scott Lyons, Boxilla County.
Zach Covington, Bear River Association of Governments in Logan.
Sean Sager with Mountain Land.
Jaime White with AFOM.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Roland Stenger, Federal Highway.
Jason Wheeler with Assist.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody we missed at all? Hey, I don't see anybody. Thanks for being here. I believe one of the great strengths of this committee, as I've said before, is the diversity. And we appreciate all of you here. You're coming from different mountains to share your vision of things, and that's a wonderful opportunity that we have. We would now look for a motion to approve the minutes of the March 8th meeting.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion to the motion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So the motion carries. We'll now move on to public comment, and we'd ask any members of the public to limit their comments to 2 minutes. And so if you would like to make a comment, we invite you to go up to the podium and give us your name, please, and your organization. It'd be helpful.
Mark's going to comment on the firing of James Comey.
Wow. Man, we give you more than 2 minutes for that one.
Looking forward to it, Mark.
There's no comment for that. Mark Benigni from Weaver Pathways. The reason I'm here is just to invite you all to a June 24th event that we are hosting. It is Trail Fest, and it's a celebration of the urban trails in Weaver County. We want to invite our general public, which is it's a free event, to join us to get out, discover, play, and learn and connect with the community. The trail system that we're going to be using is known as the Centennial Trail, and it's a connection of the Ogden River Parkway, Weaver River Parkway, and Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And that loop is about 27 miles. There's going to be 24 checkpoints throughout that entire loop. You do not have to do the entire thing. It's a family event, so each checkpoint's about a mile apart. We're going to get the health department, and we're going to identify it as going to be 20 minutes apart, so people aren't afraid of what a mile walk might be. The event will be going from 8 to 4, excuse me, from 8 to noon on the pathways, and then from noon to 3 o'clock, there'll be a celebration at the Ogden Amphitheater. The participants will get a passport, and if they get a stamp, they can enter into a raffle at the amphitheater. So you only need one stamp. If you want to do the entire 27 miles, then you'll fill up the passport. So everyone's invited. I have a few flyers I'll lay out on the table for those that are close by. One other point I'd like to make, too, is we are working with some of our local businesses. And as we request their sponsorship, I use the data that was provided in the active transportation study because it dovetails with their wellness programs. You know, part of that information, they, especially the HR directors, totally grasp it. So this passport, we don't need the entire passport, just the raffle ticket that will be torn off of it. The employees will be bringing the passport back to their organizations for evidence of participating in the wellness program and earn points for doing that. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Please.
Kim Clausing, Tooele County Health. Out in Tooele County, you know how much we've been trying to get something going. Well, we finally are. with our master plan for Tooele County, the EPIC funding that I get through the health department, we were able to get a bike and walking path proposed to put into the general plan. So I'm hoping that we can get that passed within the next month and added onto our general plan. So I would hope to maybe come present it here maybe in the next little while and see if we can get it added to the Wasatch Front Regional Plan. It is just Tooele County. I'm still trying to get Tooele City and Grantsville City on board, but hey, it's a start, so we're getting there. So it would start at Lake Point and it ends at the Tooele City line. And then we're hoping to carry on after that, but what we've done is we've identified kind of what the lowest hanging fruit is, so the easiest pathways, what is close to the schools, what is close to the majority of the communities. So we'll try to see if we can get some of it at least labeled and added on to during the summer for wayfinding signage through the health department and stuff like that. So we're getting there. So we're hoping that the rest of the cities catch the movement on it. But like I said, it started at Lake Point, and hopefully someday maybe it could swing out to Magna, or maybe someday, you know, go out to the Great Salt Lake Marina. So we'll just kind of work with you to see if we can get that at maybe one of the next upcoming meetings. But we're getting there. So just let me update and let you know.
Thank you. This kind of correlation is extremely important. We appreciate your efforts and your willingness to bring it. Is there any other comment by the public?
Well, my thoughts on James Comey. No, actually.
Do you speak Russian?
Actually,
wow, wow.
No comment. I just wanted to let people know, one of the things that Mike Utah's been working on and kind of one of the deficiencies we've recognized is there's really no local bicycle advocacy groups or active transportation advocacy groups from pretty much Ogden until almost Provo. We've got some great trails groups like Weaver Pathways and some advisory committees, but there's really no nonprofit groups that are working on pushing forward active transportation. So last month we launched our first local action group. So it's Salt Lake County focused. And basically, it's a group of citizens who are just trying to create on-the-ground changes. We've done some work already on the Marina bike route with the new prison going in. We've done some work on the McClellan Trail and Sugar House, and also on 900 West. But really, just trying to get more citizen advocates built. There are some advocates, but we need more opportunities for more citizens to get involved. So our next meeting is going to be May 18th. At Sprague Library and Sugar House. So if people, it's Salt Lake County wide. So if you have citizens who are interested in being involved, obviously you're all welcome to attend, or if there are other agencies that should be involved, I'd encourage you to attend. It's really action focused. We're kind of not talking, we're doing, well, we're talking a little bit, but we primarily think. So
where is the
time and place?
Oh, yeah, it's May 18th, 6 p.m. 6 p.m. at Sprague Library in Sugar House. So.
Hey, any other comments? Please.
Planning and Design. David Foster and I presented at the Utah Bike Summit about FHWA's new small town and rural multimodal networks guide. And I just had, we have some left over from that presentation. This isn't the entire guide, it's not only six pages. This is just a pamphlet talking about what's inside it and how it can help small towns. I think that they're defined in there as roughly 20,000 people and below, but obviously some are a little bit more suburban than others, and some are more rural than others. But it has real world examples from the United States on how to implement bike lanes and paths and different kinds of crossings, but also how to deal with constrained bridges and main streets, especially when your state highway runs through your middle of your town on a main street. So I'll just leave some of these at the table as you come in, and feel free to ask me any questions about it that you have, or our folks from FHWA as well. Thanks.
Thank you. So, anyone else have a comment? Okay, seeing none, we will close the comment period. Let me just share with you a few things very quickly that we're all moving in the right direction, and any questions you might have. We don't want to forget the Golden Spoke. The regional partners are working together in an event to be held at the new Jordan River Bridge in North Temple to celebrate the completion of over 100 miles of connected trails from Ogden to Provo. The event is tentatively scheduled for late October 2017, pending the completion of the bridge. And details will be forthcoming. And I'm sure what all of us envision with this is a great movement from Provo and Ogden, at least in my mind, as they come down the Jordan River Temple to different towns, that we join with them and we just keep the procession going, and it gets larger and larger as we move forward. If there's anything that a local city wants to do along the way in support, I think that's fine. I hope we're not breaking any Jordan River Trail rules or anything. But, you know, something, this is a big deal, as you know far better than I. It's a big deal, and it should be a big celebration. The wonderful thing about it, too, maybe that will help it if it's in October, it's during the election of local municipalities. That always helps to get people out. More city councilmen and mayors may want to join with at this. And so, you know, it's that kind of a thing as we move along. So anyway, we draw that to your attention.
If anybody's interested in that or holding a community event, contact me. We'll be working with a small group, mainly Salt Lake City to begin with, on the completion of that bridge. But Dan, you'd mentioned to me this morning that they're under construction, so they're moving forward.
Yep, it's been under construction now for a little over a month. We've got most of the piles are driven now for the columns, and moving along.
Great. Mayor Scott, it reminds me of the Murdoch Canal grand opening, Jim, where every community had an event taking place, and it was progressive.
Mm-hmm.
So you move from one end to the other end of that event. And they had approximate times, you know, that we're going to be here at 10, we're going to be there at 10:30, we're going to be here at 11, and it was really fun. It rained on us, of course.
It rained on us. Is there an overall, quickly, a program or a timetable that could be sent up to Scott here, and maybe Scott, you can distribute it to us, maybe modify it for us a little bit? I think that's a terrific idea, and there's no sense in us reinventing the wheel when the wheel's already rolling well down on the Murdoch Canal. So that'd be very nice.
That sounded like Sean was volunteering for the planning committee.
I don't read anything in anybody. I'll let other people do that.
We'll help Scott out.
Thank you. The next issue is to remember outdoor recreation grants. It can be applied between May 1st and June 15th of this year. This is a matching grant for local governments and nonprofits as well to build outdoor recreation infrastructure such as trails. And so that's something to certainly remember. It might be something if you're connected to a local municipality, not maybe you're not part of the local government, but you have a relationship with them, to to make them aware of it too. It seems like a great opportunity to help that development occur. And then, as you know, May is Bike Month, and there's different events for Bike Month. And Ride Your Bike to Work is the week is May 15th to 19th. Again, I would hope that all of the municipalities would pass. It's easy for the mayor to pass a proclamation declaring it Bike Month, and Back to Work, Ride to Work Day. In our city, we don't. In our city, we're looking towards next year of having a major event in Bike Month. We've never done that. It just, you know, everything stops with me. It came on too quickly, and we didn't get things done that way. But we're planning on that. Our recreation director is planning on that for next year. This year, we're doing a couple of things. I'm riding with a group of school teachers to school to a special needs school. We did it last year together. We ride it together. We meet at a local point in Riverton because they're coming from all over. We ride in together, and the principal's given us permission to ride down the hallway as well in the school. And it really gets things excited, and there's just a little buffet and so forth, and then there's a meeting out in the big room where the special needs students and faculty and myself have been involved. In addition to that, we have I think a lot of places in today's world, our employees are scattered from all over. And so it's not like we could meet at a certain place with one entrance to come in. They're coming through all areas of the city into it and out of the city and even out of the county. So our recreation department is scheduled on May 16th. We are doing an employee bike ride for lunch. And so we will get on the Jordan Trail together, and we will go into South Jordan and have sack lunch in our backpacks. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of young guys out there, and they scare me to death and how strong they are and how far they can go. So I know I won't be leading the pack or I'd be run over, but I'm going to be there as close as I can to go from there. And so we're excited about all of that, having that on. So you might look at something with local companies in your area or anywhere you have influence of doing something in a lunchtime thing. I thought it was a pretty wise idea from, again, our recreation department. We have a great recreation department that makes me look good whenever she can. The stuff to make me look good, she tries hard, and so we do it in that way. So anyway, are there any, just briefly, we need to move along, but is there one or two people that are doing some kind of a unique event during that we would share that would be maybe seats for others? Because there's still time. It's coming up very quickly. It's next week, but is there any special events you're doing for your employees or involved as an employee? Okay, seeing none, please.
We have one. So while Central Front, we're actually riding to Saltaire on Friday and having a truck pick us up and bring us back. But yeah, it'll be fun.
No, that's good. That's really good.
It'll be good.
And you're doing that at lunchtime?
Uh-huh, on Friday. Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah.
That is real neat. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else have anything? Okay, was that a hand going right there? No? Okay, pardon me. All righty, let's move on to the next agenda item then. We will turn the time to Phil and Tom to talk about transportation plan standards. So please. And this is dealing with one goal we have of local active transportation plans. So thank you. Thank you for doing this, gentlemen.
Hey, pleasure. I'm assuming everybody can hear me without the microphone. Yeah. So wanted to let you know about a little initiative that some of us in this room have been working on. And it's to come up with a set of active transportation plan standards. There we go. So before I get into exactly what those are, I just want to talk a little bit about where this idea came from. A couple years ago, Bike Utah, we launched something called Wasatch Bike Plan, which was a campaign to try and get every community along the Wasatch Front across those four counties to have an active transportation plan. I pretty much stole the idea from Jim Price. And I know this map here is not up to date, but basically we wanted to create this map and say, okay, where are the communities where we still need plans to be in place? For a second, can everybody raise your hand if you or somebody in your household has crossed municipal lines today in your day, or will? Loud and proud, raise your hand. Yes? That's pretty much the case for everybody. It's not enough for one community to have a plan and the next community not. We need every community along the whole Wasatch Front because everybody's day crosses municipal boundaries. So we're trying to create basically an interconnected network. And we also want to engage the health community. All the local health departments have been charged with creating changes to the environment that allow people to live more active lifestyles, and this dovetails really nicely with this. Kind of the partners along this project have been UDOT, Wasatch Front, MAG, Bike Utah, and Alta Planning and Fair and Beers donated some pro bono time on their part to help us put this together. So why do we need a set of standards? First and foremost, most communities, when they're looking at doing an active transportation plan, they look at other active transportation plans that already exist. Some are good, some are not as good. So we wanted to create some kind of baseline so we could determine, does a community that says they have a plan, and if they don't, what's the standard they need to meet in order to have a plan that will get them to the goals that they want to set in terms of making their community more bike and walk friendly. Standard for funding of active transportation plans. If communities are applying for TAP funding through UDOT or through one of the MPOs or support through TLC, now they have a set of standards that they can look at and say, well, this community in what they're planning for to develop their plan isn't meeting these standards. You know, they need more public outreach, or they need more, need to set a better vision and goal for the plan. Also, as part of this GIS consistency, I think Redwood Road's a really good example of this. There was a plan for bike lanes on a couple of the plans. There wasn't on another plan, and so now we're back to where we're doing a study about Redwood Road because the GIS maps did not line up with each other. So hopefully by having something in the standards that makes all of the GIS schema consistent, we'll avoid those sorts of situations in the future. And then this is from an advocacy perspective, identifying communities that need a little nudge. There are some that have been really proactive in terms of implementing active transportation. There are others that have not. And hopefully by evaluating what communities have done, we can say these are communities that we need to maybe make special efforts towards reaching out to them in order to get them on board. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tom quickly to go over the specific standards because he knows it far better than I do, far better than probably any of us do.
Thanks, Phil. Just wanted to reiterate what Phil said about it being a very collaborative effort, that it wasn't just Phil and I sitting down and coming up with some ideas that we really wanted everybody to adopt, nor is it just something that was pulled out of thin air. So we had representation from UDOT, from WFRC, from MAG, obviously from Bike Utah, and then from us and from Fair and Pierce. And we also didn't just sit down and just cobble together a list of things that we thought were important. We looked to other communities, other MPOs, other states, what their plan standards were, not necessarily what their plan said, because sometimes people deviate from the standards or do more than the standard says, but which states actually had those plan standards statewide. One was North Carolina. Their Department of Transportation has a two or three page document that says these are the things that all plans have to include. Not only are they good for plans, but they're also good for funding. They'll improve your likelihood of receiving funding. Another that we looked at was the Atlanta the ARC, the Atlanta Regional Commission, they did a plan called Walk, Bike, Thrive that had some standards in it that applied to all of the communities that fell within their jurisdiction. And we looked at several others too and pulled a little from here, a little from there, but really the North Carolina and the Atlanta standards were some of the standards that we used as a basis. So you have in your packets, or if you picked it up at the front, you have this convenient, though difficult to make, two-page document that has seven standard sections, and then it has some elements to those sections underneath that are recommended or optional, and then some that are required in order to meet this this plan standard. So first, I wanted to draw your attention to the introduction and process. So this doesn't necessarily have to do with things that have to be in the plan, but rather why the standards are important. And especially, I like the last sentence and then these four bullet points. It says, oh, sorry, the last two sentences. In the end, the process is the most important part of a plan. By including a broad representation of the community and appropriate internal and external partners, a community is more likely to have an active transportation plan that addresses community needs, meets the needs of partners, can be implemented successfully, and is broadly supported. And in our experience as consultants, as well as the experience of everybody that was involved, we saw, or we brought to the table this experience of plans that haven't done so well, or plans that haven't moved forward past adoption, or plans that haven't even gotten to adoption, and sort of took those lessons learned and applied them here to the standards so that not only are they a list of things that people can do, but also a list of lessons learned on how to make things successful. I should have had that up while I was reading that. So let's get into what the standards are. I'll just run through it real quick. Partner engagement is one. Public engagement is another. Setting the vision, goals, and objectives. Analyzing the existing or current conditions, providing recommendations, providing an implementation strategy, and then outlining performance measures to go along with those standards and those recommendations. So for partner engagement, we thought that it was very important that we include at least one of the following officials: the city manager, planning commissioner, city council member, and then all of the following departments: planning, engineering, public works or streets, and parks. Often we find that a plan that's done just by the planning department is often not widely accepted by the others. A plan that's just done by the engineering department, no offense to engineers, tends to be very formulaic and not very visionary in terms of what other plans are going on in the city.
Why didn't you put a mayor up there?
Not every mayor's like you.
Yeah. I know, but even if they don't ride a bike or anything like that, when the mayor's involved, there's far more action involved. And so, you know, just a thought. I like the fact you have a city council member, because you ought to be able to find out of a city council somebody that's involved or wants to be in active transportation. But just a thought, not any direction, just a thought.
And all of these are in draft form right now. These aren't the final standards. That's why we're coming to you to present and get your ideas. So I think that's an excellent idea to add. Thank you. And then the last is to identify a champion or multiple champions who would be a person either inside the city or outside of the city that takes this plan beyond adoption and allows it to be implemented after the planning process is officially over. As far as public engagement, we didn't decide on one thing that would work for every community, but we did provide some ideas on what could. Often it's limited to a public open house or a hearing, and so we provided the standard to choose at least two of these so that you're not just confined to those open houses. So we have open houses or charrettes, online survey, allowing people who wouldn't come to a meeting to participate, opportunities to comment on plans or maps online, intercept surveys, pop-up meetings, and walk and bicycle audit that you could invite the community to. And then, and obviously these partners and the public engagement will be happening concurrently with the plan, but this is sort of the first step to the planning process, setting that vision and goals, what the plan's gonna do, what the city wants to be in the future, and how the plan will help them get there. Then an analysis of existing or current conditions. So this will be looking at what facilities are currently existing and what facility types, if you have trails, bike lanes, or sidewalks. Identification of barriers and gaps. Some demographic information so that you know the difference between Riverton and Salt Lake and Morgan, because they are different people with different needs. Identifying where crashes are occurring and what trends are happening in those crashes. Integrating with other active transportation plans, so perhaps reviewing a plan that was done in the next community over or for the entire county, so that the efforts of that community's plan are not lost on the community that's currently doing their plan, but also, like Phil said, so that previous recommendations are carried forward into the new planning process. And finally, connections with transit and community destinations. Then the fun part comes, the recommendations, where new facilities are gonna go. And this includes both capital projects, but also these soft recommendations like programs and policies. So Phil said, or Phil mentioned the GIS schema. WFRC has identified a schema that they would like to use throughout all of their communities so that all of the data matches up, everybody's using the same nomenclature and structure in their mapping data. In programs, we identified programming that's associated with existing and recommended facilities, these here in A, as well as local context-specific safe routes to school programs. And then as far as policies go, this would include policies that are friendly to bicycling and walking, design standards, roadway construction standards, and things like that. And finally, these last two are more of the, what are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do now that we have these recommendations? How are we gonna move forward? So the implementation strategy, and this is, these two are often where plans lack a vision forward. They might have some really good ideas on where lines are gonna be on a map and what the existing conditions look like, but this really makes it an action-oriented plan. So a list of actions from these recommendations. Funding opportunities, and capital and maintenance costs and budgets. And then for performance measures, these would be things that measure how well the city is doing in implementing these recommendations. This could include identifying and tracking the walking and bicycling mode share, both for commutes and for all trips. doing regular walking and bicycling counts, and this is something that's gaining momentum here in the region. And then following up with these crash and safety figures, tracking them year after year, and hopefully seeing a decline in those figures. Any questions on those standards, Mark?
Yeah, Charlie and Travis and I, we were working on a project that's started out of the Chamber of Commerce, and so that's where my question is leading with regard to businesses. You talk about identifying partners, and having all these standards and everything are great, putting lines on roads, etc. But we're looking at it from an aspect of more of a pull, because you can put the lines there, but it doesn't mean the people are going to actually use it. So maybe that is one element, is to get the businesses involved. And what comes to mind is one thing we're looking at is the limited resource of time. In certain instances, it's quicker to get on your bike and ride to the store than it would be to get in your car, drive, and find a place to park. But the issue is that where do I park my bike? Right next to the front door of the store. And so as other example is the front runner train. When I first started riding on a bike, there was no bike racks. Now, because of demand, because for example, a store saw that demand of needing to have some space for bikes. So getting businesses involved to pull people and using that mode might be an important strategy.
Do you think that we should add something about that here in partner engagement, or should we add it more in the
I think in the beginning. Yeah. If you draw a line to a store that has a place to park your bike, it doesn't really do it. And the business isn't ready to accept that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe Jim Price has a better experience because I think he's moved farther along than we have.
That's a great idea. And one thing that I did want to mention is that these policies and programs would include some of those things like bicycle parking, encouragement, community outreach, beyond the planning process that would go forward. Thanks for that.
I would recommend putting in both partner engagement and public engagement. A lot of times your commercial partners aren't going to be serious until they know the public is serious about it.
Great idea. Elliot?
Tom, I think maintenance needs to be an important part of your vision and goals and objectives. Where I see communities falling down is their ability to create infrastructure development, but they're not funding maintenance and upkeep, and so they deteriorate after a while. We see that with plants, we see that with striping, we see that in street sweeping. And so I think under goals, vision and objectives and maintenance needs to be component.
Thank you. And we were discussing that in another section. Let's see, the implementation strategy where it talks about capital maintenance cost estimates and budget so that the community isn't just saying we're going to do it, but also that they apply a cost to those maintenance practices as well as the capital.
Otherwise they'll flow over.
Thank you. Yeah?
Just under programs there, you do say recommended maintenance plan, and maybe that just wants to be part of their
good idea. Yeah.
I think also on the recommended partners, down on the partner engagement, the first one, maybe adding work sites as well. It's not all work sites or businesses. Like if you didn't want them in their wellness programs, for example.
Good idea. Thank you. Anyone else? Any questions? Andrew?
Yeah, just for a community, I mean, I don't have a comment on the standards themselves. I just want to, if you guys could talk a little more about if a community, like I'm thinking about, you know, my new city, Mill Creek. And so like, let's say, you know, Mill Creek said, oh, well, we want to move forward and adopt a local plan. There's a lot of great recommendations here, but what are the steps that the community needs to take to be able to, what are the resources at the local level, staff, you know, funding, consultant assistance, whatever, that you think would be needed, and maybe Scott, you can comment, or Jim, you can comment on those too. What are the resources that would be needed for a community to actually, if they decided we want to move forward, to actually implement and develop the plan in the way you've recommended?
So I was going to talk about what we're going to do with this document, how we're going to use it.
Okay.
And so
I can talk about that too. That's our next slide.
Oh,
so
is it?
Yeah, if you want me to.
Yeah, you.
Great.
You start in, and then we'll.
So I was just anticipating transitioning to the next slide.
There you go.
There might have been another hand just before we move on from the standards themselves. Okay.
So yeah, so here are kind of the next steps that we have planned for this document. We actually we're kind of compiling a working group of county active transportation staff and health department to review all the plans. I mean, that's really the goal, is to go through the four Wasatch Front counties and review all the plans and say, do they have it, do they not? If they don't have a plan, how do we take those next steps? And really, I see this as kind of a tool to begin outreach to those communities. I don't think this is going to be, the document happens and that's it. I think it's gonna be a combination of Wasatch Front, MAG, the health departments, Bike Utah, working together to reach out to those communities that don't have plans and say, here's what you need to do, here's where the funding mechanisms are, and here's kind of the next steps in that process. And then really directing them towards funding mechanisms. Scott and I have talked at length about this, is this is a good time to be rolling this out because it kind of cues it right up for the next round of WFRC funding opportunities. And so so that's really kind of the next steps in regards to that.
So it's kind of twofold. I mean, one it acts as a way for us to check mark existing plans, and then the other is to provide it as a resource to those communities who might have the staff resources to do the plan on their own, as this is a basic set of standards, and feel free to do more than this, but if you create a plan in-house and it meets these check boxes, we're good to go. And then we'll use this, and with Alta and Farron Peer's help in developing it, this is a pre-scoping document for any AT plan that we do. This will be the, you know, insertable scope of at least these pieces, and then maybe we have the plus ones or plus twos that the community really wants to get interested in public outreach or performance measuring. But it creates a template so that we don't go to a community and say, hey, you don't really have an AT plan, and they say, well, we have an online map, and we can say, well, it's, you know, these are the reasons that we feel your AT plan could be buffed up.
Yeah. And so really where we need support, if people have more revisions to the plan, they're welcome to email them to, you know, Scott, Tom, or myself. And then if you're looking at your own community, and realize, you know, this is a great opportunity to take this set of standards and say, hey, do we have a plan or not? And then the main thing we're really going to need help with is outreach to those communities that don't have plans. Us as a nonprofit organization, we don't swing a very big stick when it comes to convincing mayors to do things, but other mayors might have a good opportunity to reach out to their peers to help them, because I mean, if you leave Riverton and you roll into the next town over and it's not great for your citizens to leave their community, or for citizens in a neighboring community to get safely to your community, there's really a deficiency in mobility there.
And also, just in Phil and I's initial review of the plans across the region, we've identified communities that might be able to work together to create multi-jurisdictional active transportation plans. So Farmington and Kaysville, I think, is a really good example of two communities who came together, created a cohesive plan at their borders, and then there was some really fun competition between the two communities on who adopted it first. So there was another layer of who got the most comments and the most people out. And so we've done an initial kind of geography of the region, and we'll be coming out and speaking to communities and seeing how they might partner with their neighbors, because there's a certain point where it doesn't get that much more expensive to roll another community in versus leaving them out and then having them have all the startup costs of creating another plan.
So, and I think in terms of tracking this moving forward, I mean, I could think WFRC and Bike Utah will probably create a map that is updated from that original one that I showed you, that shows the communities that have them and those that don't. And it's not a means of shaming anybody. It's a means of saying, we really need to get these communities engaged, or we're never going to have a network that reaches all the citizens along the Wasatch Front. So.
With your help, this will be our objective measure of what, you know, our goal too for creation of local active transportation plans as the ATC, how we measure that. So we really need your involvement and investment in this now, and then we'll roll it out finally. Go ahead, Angela.
Heidi's been working with Phil on quite a bit when he got in, so we really like what they've done here. It's really good work, you guys. We're going to try to embrace this. We're going to work with our work program this next year and look at bringing it in with our Road Respect program as Heidi rolls that out for the new year. And then we'll also bring it in with our Travelwise program and tying to the TLC program as well.
Nice.
Okay, and the other thing we're going to do, which hasn't, I don't know how much Heidi's talked to you about, we're bringing out Strava data. We bought this thing now, and we're going to be getting training with Strava data, just basically getting some really good bicycle counting data going. And we're going to use this and work with you guys and see how we can get Strava out there for local governments. UDOT can't promote Strava by itself, but Phil can, and others can. We're going to use that as our main bicycle counting tool.
And kind of speaking of it, I mean, I think having UDOT embrace this to some extent We don't want this just to be a Wasatch Front thing. I mean, this is obviously open for anybody across the state to use. Right. We're primarily just looking at as where's the low-hanging fruit right now, and clearly with 85% of the population in four counties, that's the best opportunity to reach the greatest number of people. So,
Bill, just an observation. Eating an elephant one bite at a time, right? But the elephant in this particular case isn't active transportation. It's creating livable cities or communities. One thing that I've learned over my experience is that when we start siloing specific subjects, eating those bites individually, sometimes it's challenging to coordinate all the different planning efforts that a municipality has to do. Not that you're advocating for siloing, but there is an application here to emphasize and focus on active transportation. You go out to the public and you ask specific questions regarding active transportation. Sometimes the answers to those questions would be different if the public were also engaged in answering other questions. The reason I'm saying this is because looking at this from a comprehensive perspective, what we do in our plan, in our planning efforts, is we try and combine everything in order to not have the individual silos that may eventually conflict. As you're going through the different jurisdictions, pulling out their AT element, you may be pulling out AT, you may be pulling out the full transportation element, you may be pulling out the community commercial design element, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I know we talked at the Weber Active Transportation Committee about the AT plan, and it almost seemed like there's just a silo around that. How do we pull that out of plans that talk about AT, emphasize AT, but do it in a more comprehensive manner?
Well, and this isn't just purely, I mean, if they have a general plan that is inclusive of active transportation, I have no issues with that at all. Because I know, like, South Salt Lake is working on their general plan or transportation plan. Okay. I see this is just as a mechanism for us to evaluate that portion of that general plan.
Absolutely. So the challenge is, in some of them, you're going to be reading general plans.
Yeah, exactly.
And others of them, you're going to be reading a general plan element.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I just think sure that would be hard.
One bite at a time.
and going off of that and off of your comment, I think that, yeah, looking at the standards, you might think, wow, that's going to be a lot of work. But some communities, like you said, already have some of those elements rolled into their comprehensive plan, their transportation plan. And so it's not to say, hey, you haven't met these things in your transportation plan, because obviously that is not the purpose of the transportation plan, but rather to say, hey, you have these great elements. These are the makings of your vision, your goals, your preliminary recommendations for an active transportation plan. Let us help you find funding for a planning process and hopefully help you write the story so it's easier to know how to get from where they are right now to where the entire region or the entire state wants to be in terms of those planning standards.
I like that. So kind of like doing a plan audit, pulling out and emphasizing the parts of the plan.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. Because we don't want to say, you don't have a specific AT plan that was done by ALTA. We don't want to get into that. But we just want to make sure they have the foundation set so that they can actually start implementing this stuff. And we think that list is the baseline for this.
And as communities, sorry, one last thing. As communities are updating their active transportation plans, I mean the first. Active transportation plan probably was Salt Lake City's 2004, do you remember, Tim, on that list? Around there. And so as these plans get updated, this is just a way to say, hey, you've done all these things in your previous plan, perhaps just adding these other scope elements could be a way of updating your plan, bringing it up to that.
It could be as simple as converting it from the old class 1, 2, 3 to the new schema of different typologies. That might be where the plan lacks, or it might lack an implementation standard or specific section that talks about how we're going to get this built. And a lot of plans go into tons of detail about what there is going to be, and then there's very little about how we're going to get there or what the next steps are. So it's that plan audit. I think that's a perfect way to say what we'll do is go through.
Father Time always presses on us. Is there anything before you don't sit down? Is there anything that you have that's critical that you haven't brought up yet? Any critical questions before we go on to the next presenter?
Tom, Phil, I think it's also critical to identify the role of where regional agencies need to play a role for links. We have multi-jurisdictional boundaries and roads in the plan. It really needs to be identified where to overcome these nodes in the network, mm-hmm. or one community or two. You need three or four coming together. It's really been a barrier to proceed some of these critical projects because they lie right in the node of several jurisdictions.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks, George.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I guess, given Scott, that one of the goals is the regional plans, and then tying the local active transportation plans into the regional plans. And maybe I missed it, but perhaps it's one of the elements in the checklist for the locals to consider as they're going through their plans is consistency with applicable regional plans. Now, you did reference connecting with the MPO and the DOT, et cetera, but it might make sense to emphasize that point a little more strongly.
Yeah. Great point. Thank you.
Okay. Question here, comment?
I just want to say thank you, because in our area, it kind of gives more of a foundation for some areas to have something to follow, and I think it's
good.
Thank you. We'll now move on to item 5, which is Box Elder Draft AT Plan. We'll turn it to Zach and Scott. This is also part, obviously, of Goal 2, local planning.
Oh, we've all got our checklists out now. So
I've already been checking them off.
Good.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to come down. I wanted to thank Scott for letting us come down and present this plan to everybody, let you know what's been happening up in the northern part of the state. Zach Cunningham of Bear River Association of Governments. We are in Utah. We're not in southern Idaho, like a lot of people think. We work very closely with Wasatch Front Regional Council on a number of projects. Sam Clam, for example, is very involved in our planning group up there in Box Elder County. So I just want to thank everybody for letting us come down and talk about this. And Scott Lyons, he's the Box Elder County Community Development Director, so he's going to be joining me on this as well. Over the past year, we've been working. Bragg has been helping the county work through an active transportation planning process. You can see a lot of the project partners on here. Mainly the local governments. We approached mayors and council members in Box Elder County, commissioners, Box Elder County, Brigham City, Perry, South Willard community was represented by the county, and Willard City. Other partners you can see down here, a little small, hard to read, but Bike Utah, UTA, Wasatch Front Regional Council, Forest Service, state and other state federal agencies, canal companies, health departments. We try to get everybody involved. I should mention that this is we're calling this a concept plan. This is not a master plan. It's kind of a basic concept plan. The vision is to create non-motorized system connecting communities in the county and to adjacent counties to provide safe opportunities for recreation, education, public health, alternative transportation, economic development, and resource sharing. I'll go through these just really quick. The goals are to provide connectivity, create partnerships, connect to town centers, economic areas, provide information, via signage, social media, whatever, and then recreational amenities, of course. Really basic and simple plan. Don't need to spend too much time on that. Basically, a lot of this started when Willard City approached Bragg for assistance with finding a multi-use paved pathway in Willard City, something that hadn't really been done in the area yet. And Willard really wanted to try to work to create this. We actually, all the communities up there share a big corridor which was part of the old Utah-Idaho Central Rail. Locally, I guess in Weber County, it's known as the Bamberger Corridor. They call it Bamberger up there, but it's actually not. It stops somewhere around the county line. But anyway, the county has right-of-way. Willard City, Perry, and Brigham all have right-of-way along this corridor. It's an abandoned railway. The tracks have been pulled off, and it's mostly planned for these communities that have local roads. And so Willard actually constructed 1.5 miles of a 10-foot-wide paved pathway, asphalt pathway. And so other communities in the county started talking, well, how do we want this to link up? How do we want to connect? Mainly through Perry to the north into Brigham City, and then south through the county. Originally, the National Park Service Rivers, Trails, and Conservation Assistance Program, RTCA, was actually doing the plan. They had staff changes and asked Bragg to kind of follow up and complete the plan. So this is the main map for the plan. It's a little tough to see, but we wanted to help communities kind of be able to agree on where these north-south corridors mostly were located. The blue, it's kind of, don't want to go through too much detail, the blue is shared use, multi-use pathways. Orange is bike lane, green is single track. You see kind of bottom of the shoreline on this eastern bench. And then we've got unimproved roads or jeep trails, which a lot of these areas, Perry and Willard specifically, have a lot of these little jeep trails. None of them are officially adopted by the city of the trail, but they're used by everybody, right? I should also mention Bonneville Shoreline. There's technically 0 official miles of Bonneville Shoreline Trail in Box Elder County. But as you can see from Perry South, there's a lot of sections that are constructed, they're being used. I shouldn't say anymore, right? I've used them before, maybe I should stop there. But they're great trails, very scenic. There's kind of a couple of road trail builders up there that have done some excellent work, but we're not endorsing it, right? Okay. I just kind of wanted to go through some of these corridors specifically so you can see what we've been working with communities on. And Scott, if you have anything, interrupt me anytime. This is the historic Orchard Pathway. As you can see, from Brigham City South, it's planned to go all the way through Weber County. Scott, you want to, I guess, maybe talk about the connection to Weber County a little bit there?
Down, when you get down to the south end here, this portion is actually owned by Weber Pathways, and the corridor is. And we've partnered with them on getting a bridge built across the canal, or not built, but improved across the canal, and that ties into one of their trails. Our goal, county's goal from Willard South, we own that whole corridor already, and that's something we're looking to develop in the next year or two. And then we'll get in touch with Weber Pathways. They've been involved in this plan, but we'd like to join that all the way into their trail at the south end of Oxley County.
And when that's connected, that'll connect obviously into Weber Pathways systems, which eventually connects into Legacy, right, and then Jordan River Trail. So that's part of Box Elder County's, I guess, vision of connecting to all these other regional trails. So this is a planned 8 to 10 foot wide multi-use pathway. Perry City, I guess you can see right here, this solid area is where Willard's already put that 1.5 miles in. Perry City, some of this has been either funded or they're working on funding to put some of those sections in, and I think you're aware of some of those applications, some of those projects. And of course, the county is working on some of these southern sections. Where Willard hasn't constructed anything yet, they've even put signs up in their community along local roads that say this is historic Orchard Pathway. Eventually, they'll stripe it and use a shoulder for a while until they can find the funding to get pathway in. The next one is UTA Front Runner Corridor. We realize this is a long ways out, the Front Runner coming up. In fact, we've been working with WFRC staff and others to discuss transit in Box Elder County. And this is part of the discussion, is this multi-use pathway along the rail corridor. We're also working in coordination with the State Division of Water Resources related to the Bear River Development Pipeline, where that pipeline eventually goes. Right now they're thinking it could parallel the Front Runner. And the idea is to put a pathway on top of it, and whether that's before it's even built, having a pathway, or whether it's after they come in and put the pipeline in, putting a pathway on top of that. It's a great opportunity, so we want to make sure that's reflected in the plan. The Bay Trail goes from Willard Bay north all the way up to the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge. This is another proposed trail along a dirt road mostly. When it hits Perry, the proposal is to have a non-motorized pedestrian pathway that goes up to the refuge. Bonneville Shoreline, as I mentioned, a lot of this is constructed from Perry South, ties into Weaver Pathway section of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. There are some sections being used north of Brigham and up, I don't know if you've ever seen that trail, that goes through Box Elder Canyon up to Manaway. There's a nice little mountain biking trail that, I guess if you're not careful, you could die, right? It's pretty extreme, some parts of that. But we've also been working with Wildlife Resources. This is all the Brigham Face Wildlife Management Area. And they've agreed to allow some access for Bonneville Shoreline potentially in the future, which is pretty exciting. So we just had preliminary discussions about that. Lower Bench, this essentially is a canal trail. These are canals that run all the way down that eastern bench. These roads and trails are used daily by local residents. None of them are official, so the hope is to be able to get some agreements for public use on those down the road. And of course, we'll be looking to MAG, Mountain Association of Governments, with the things they've done with many of their trails, especially Murdoch Trail, right, to see what they've done on there to get those.
So all your trails are trying to make 12-foot wide?
You know, we're kind of, everything varies. I mean, this particular one, I think we'll take what we can get, right? The historic orchard pathway, we're looking at about 10 foot for a standard. Same with the UTA corridor, it's 10 foot wide for a standard. Bonneville Shoreline, of course, will be, in this area, it's planned to be single track. Some areas like in Cache County and down in this area, it's quite wide. I think the idea in Box Elder County is to be more of a single track. Also, a really high elevation fire break road exists up above, kind of in the Forest Service area in state lands. And that's a perfect opportunity for some access for people recreating in that area as well. This one's kind of interesting. This is 11th South. So I-15 runs right here. And this is 11th South, Highway 89, 91. It goes up to Logan, Manaway and Logan. Just, I guess, as a side note, we had some folks at UDOT tell the city, Brigham City, that they couldn't put a trail in that corridor. And then a bunch of us went down and met with UDOT Region 1, and they saw this and said, there's an old rail spur there. Why don't you guys put a trail there? So we said, what a great idea. This is an abandoned rail spur that goes from Union Pacific tracks all the way up to the old Indian School, which is now owned by Utah State University. And it's about 50 to 60 feet off. Well, here's a picture of it right here. Here's the highway, about 50, 60 feet off. There's a old rail bed that's already graded out. The tracks are removed. It's pretty much ready to go. It just needs to have something put on it. Where it goes up in this area is still a mystery. We're looking at maybe routing it back through here. Apparently, UDOT's doing some road work on this stretch.
I have a question on that.
Yes.
So, Box Elder really pushed to have the corridor preservation fund changed so they could use it to help fix up roads and things like that. I'm just wondering if it could be stretched, like if this has to have an overlay or something, cannot that you could access some of that money. Just something to think about, another way to get money, but they have not been able to use all their money to buy more right away, so they went to the legislature and changed the code so it could be used to upgrade or take care of the problem. I just know a lot of trails, especially in Twilla County, Kim has tried to get the city to do some things, and the really people walk were terrible, especially when going up to Andover. And that's, they would let you access. But Box Elder was a real big pusher in this, funding change. Just something to think about.
Yeah, and I think that's been discussed to some extent, but the hiccup with that is the funds for that corridor preservation fund come directly from motor vehicle registration.
Correct.
And so that's where we've run into issues as far as active transportation, as they say, well, none of that funding's coming from active transportation.
Well, maybe transfer some from the roads to there. Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing it's to sit down and talk to them, because they had a pretty good reserve in that. I think it's probably the county commissioners probably didn't find that, but I think it's something to think about, because that was other funds available. And they use it on the road and they can transfer over the side of it. Just something to think about.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, part of this plan is branding, as you all know. This is highlighted because this is actually being used right now. This historic orchard pathway signage is on the Willard City section. And we have one of our great interns. I should mention we have two great interns in this process, Scott McComb and Joe Nielsen. Scott pretty much wrote this plan in most of the language, design, everything. So I should really give him credit for what's been done there. But these are what we're looking at for the four main corridors: Historic Orchard Pathway, Front Runner Rail Trail, Bonneville Shoreline, and the Bay Trail. They're just ideas for how to kind of market these, and Box Elder County Tourism is really on board with trying to promote these as we get this plan approved. East-West corridors were also looked at. Scott McComb did a pretty nice analysis showing kind of network analysis and GIS showing kind of the best ways to cross these corridors utilizing existing roadways, easements, etc. And so we've got that as an appendix in the plan. Proposed timeline, as you know, these things take a lot of time. We started conceptually designing all these pathways, of course, with where the alignment goes. But we're looking at some of these low-hanging fruit, the Bay Trail and Firebreak Trail, and even the Lower Bench and some others, Historic Orchard Pathway we're starting. They're already there. They're already being used. It's just a matter of getting permission, right? And that's always a fight. You make it official, and then you have communities or landowners kind of backlash on you, or do you leave it alone and let people use it? Do you document the Strava data and whatever other data you can? And we talked about this a little bit before with prescriptive easements, et cetera. How long do you document public use so that it can be designated as a public highway or a public road? So right now, Cache County is talking about that in a lot of detail with the county attorneys. We've just barely been discussing this in Box Elder County. So if anyone has any ideas or information on how we can kind of move forward with some of those, please contact us. We'd love to talk to you. There's sections on implementation, regulations, and management. It was really nice to hear from Phil and Alpha Planning about these standards. We've been sort of adopted the GIS standards a couple of years ago, so we're trying to make sure our data is in line with what you're doing here. But Scott, I know Scott just went through your checklist.
Been doing a self audit.
Good.
We're doing fairly good. I'd be very interested in shooting it over to Scott and Phil and having you guys, you know, as you were talking about, doing an audit of it and maybe get where we're still in draft form. We're planning on, and that's a question I had as well, which this doesn't necessarily address, is does this group see an advantage to these active transportation plans being adopted as a standalone plan versus being adopted as part of a city or county's general plan? Is there an advantage or guidance one way or the other?
You know, it really comes down to a champion who's willing to take the plan off the shelf and implement it. So regardless of whether it's embedded in a general plan or if it's your standalone plan, it just takes somebody being willing to open it and look at it again the next year and the next year, and then when you get to 2025, say, did we meet that thing, you know, or continue? So really, I don't think it matters. It's more about having somebody local who's a champion for the plan.
If I could add, I mean, I think it's important that these things get into a transportation master plan. As we look at integrated transportation, look at transit in the future, in cars, it's important to make sure that we're covering all the different modes of transportation.
I think what you've seen, the only reason you have these standalone plans is because the active transportation plans were out front, and they just haven't had time to be adopted back into the general plan. Mm-hmm. So just reinforcing that, yeah, they should eventually work their way back to a general plan, but also, yeah, identifying the champions of each of the elements of your plan is critical, whether that's encouragement or on the ground. If you don't have a champion, you're going to fail at whatever element that doesn't have a champion.
So this is a lot for a small community, a small county, and these small towns to kind of bite off, right? And big projects, a lot going on. The hope is that by agreeing on these corridors, as it was mentioned earlier, you know, we have all the mayors, we've had them on board from the beginning, and they've sent council members, et cetera. And in rural areas, especially, it's key to get those mayors on board, because they're really the ones that are, you know, we're talking about, well, should we have engineers, attorneys, roads crews, everyone else on board. A lot of these small towns, the mayor does all that. Maybe one or two staff people, if even that, right? So I agree with that comment that it's critical to get those mayors on board. And hopefully no one will be voted out in elections, you know, in the next few years, and we'll be able to continue.
We're pretty, at least for the region that we're working with, we're pretty fortunate to have, you know, all the mayors up front signed basically I don't really call it a letter of support, stating that they were interested in seeing this project happen, and so, you know, that's included as part of the plan. And hopefully, depending on how it's adopted, that's why I wanted to ask that. I know the county, we're interested in adopting it as part of our transportation master plan, which is part of our general plan. We feel like it'll have more teeth that way. I've already spoken just last week. A developer came in that has in the property that he wants to develop has three different sections of this. It has the historic orchard pathway that goes through his property. It has the canal trail to the east that goes through his property, and it has one of the east-west connectors that goes through his property. And I showed it to him, and he was completely on board. You know, I said, look, this is what we're going to adopt as part of the general plan. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be exactly where we're delineating it here, but we do need, you know, we're going to need these as part of your development. He said, great, let's make it work. And so we're already seeing benefits from the work that has been put in as far as, you know, analysis of where these things should go. And I think that'll continue to be a benefit. So
we've seen some good public support too. We had an open house, public open house, that we think we had around 70 or 80 people.
Way more than we expected.
Which we were figuring on maybe 10 or 15. But it was a crowded room. We had maps all over with people drawing on them, drawing lines, writing notes. And that was kind of a great experience to see that kind of support up there for active transportation.
Hey, Scott. Have you had the ability to talk to the folks from Far West? They're currently in the process of updating their general plan. They want to focus as well on active transportation. And where that Bamberger trail hits the county line, it might be nice to see that coming right into, you know, where they would like to see it pick up on the street or something. It's all possible.
No, it's not a bad idea. We worked with Weber Pathways. They've kind of been our contact from the Weber County side of things, but that's, yeah, we'll get in touch with them.
Scott, Zach, it's good to have you guys down here. We've talked in the past about a bike path along the Bear River. It's not part of this discussion, but on your to-do list, big picture, long term, it would be wonderful to have a multi-use path along the Bear River. The problem you're facing in Box Elder County and also Cache County is that the legacy farming, ranching families are selling out, and the kids don't want to get their hands in the dirt. So before we lose access to those properties, we need to get the easements in for able for you path. It's just a tremendous resource you guys have up there with the Bear River. So I would point that out. Secondly, around here, the gold standard is the Murdoch Trail. See what they did and replicate it. It was like, it's really good.
They do. We look to them for those ideas for certain. So. As far as the Bear River, you know, the plan down the road is to have a phase two, right, for Northern Box Elder County trails planning. The Bear River has largely been unplanned for forever, right? And it's just most recently that the state, portion of the state lands is actually doing a comprehensive management plan for the river. They're right in the middle of that right now. They've got some draft plans out. And that includes just recreation access actually in the high water area, annual high water mark, right? Outside of that, we've talked about having some kind of pathway before, and I agree with you. I think it'd be a great amenity. This would be the time to do it. I know Nature Conservancy and others are a little nervous about that, and so we'd have to work with them to find a place for that that doesn't interfere with some of their wildlife goals and other things. They're working on a Lower Bear River Conservation Action Plan right now where they're trying to look at to meet conservation goals to protect certain endangered species or threatened species along the river. And a lot of that has to do with habitat, right, where wetlands are and riparian areas, et cetera. So it would really be a good idea, I think, in the next phase to look at that and start working with those groups to get some ideas. That's a great comment.
Are there any last questions before we move on? Please.
I don't mean to be talking for half of the meeting.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Okay. Two things. My wife and I actually went on a bike tour through this area in October, and it was lovely, so good job. And then the second, I did see the draft of the plan, and just in my opinion, I'd say it's the best staff-done active transportation plan that I've ever seen, let alone one of the best active transportation plans, period. So, good job.
That's nice of you. If Scott was here, I'd tell him. I'll make sure to tell him.
So, just out of curiosity, what area did you tour?
We went from here up to Crystal Hot Springs.
Okay.
But we rode on Highway 89 for most of it, and then took some back roads out to the Bear River Bird Refuge.
Gotcha.
And then up to Crystal Hot Springs.
Okay, any last minute thing, gentlemen?
Well, we just look forward to working with you further on this plan and other plans that we have in Box Elder County. So.
Thanks so much for sharing.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Very, very important. Well, now we'll move on to item number 6, which is dealing with funding. We'll turn the time to Ben.
Good morning. I've been asked to give a report on the recommended projects for three of the programs the Wasatch Front Regional Council has responsibility to program. That would be in the Surface Transportation Program or the SDP funds, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality or the CMAQ program, or the Transportation Alternative Program or the TAP. As you may be aware or recall, back in September we sent out letters requesting letters of intent of potential projects that we could evaluate that could potentially be eligible for these funds. Those eligible project sponsors were asked to submit a project concept report. Those were due back to us by the middle part of January. From about the middle part of January through the end of March, staff with the technical advisory committees began an evaluation process that included communication with project sponsors, as well as an on-site field review and other items. Then at the end of March, the technical advisory committees made recommendations that we took to Transcom that met in April, and they reviewed those projects and recommendations from the TAC, and they made recommendations to the regional council that will meet later here in the month of May. Once the regional council approves those projects, they will be adopted into the draft programs for each of those three, and they will be included in the draft transportation improvement program, the 2018-2023 TIP. That'll go out for public comment during the month of July. Then we'll bring that information and any comments we may have received back to all of the committees through the month of August. then that will be, once approved there, we'll go to Federal Highways and Federal Transit Agency for their review for an approved transportation improvement program in October, which will overlap as we begin the process again this coming September. So in the Ogden-Layton urban area, we had 50 concept reports that were submitted of eligible projects totaling more than $233 million. These were just the projects that were submitted, not all of the needs in the Ogden-Layton urban area. In STP requests, there was almost $84 million in requests. The CMAQ program, there was a little more than $12 million towards a $3 million availability on funds. And in the TAP program, there was more than $8 million in requests. In the Salt Lake area, there were also 50 projects that were requested, totaling more than $183 million, with a request against the STP program of almost $95 million. CMAQ was just over $19 million, and the TAP program just under $2 million. So significant demands in both of the urban areas. Each of you should have had a copy. There's evaluation sheets of all three programs. There's the STP, the CMAQ, and the TAP programs. How these are laid out, in that concept report, we requested information for specific data. Not all the data for every project was considered, but we were asking for some specific data that we were able to measure project against project to give us one form of a measuring stick. There are several things that would help us identify the best project, but we wanted something to be able to look at project against project to give us one of our measuring sticks or one resource to identify or help identify good projects. These project sheets that you have, or evaluation sheets, are ranked by the score that was accomplished by the data that was requested. The projects that are highlighted in yellow were the projects that were recommended. And in the blue column, or the field down the left-hand side of the sheet, will be or identify the amount of funds that were recommended for that particular project. Now, due to time, we won't go through all these projects, but I felt it necessary to point out at least those projects in the TAP program, and maybe highlight a couple in the STP and the CMAQ program. So real quick, in the transportation alternative programs, there were four recommended out of the Ogden-Layton area, totaling the $766,000. In the Salt Lake area, there were six projects, totaling the amount that was available of a little more than $1,048,000. So in the, starting with the Ogden-Layton, out of the four, the North Salt Lake project, Orchard Drive, this is to construct sidewalk. This is a safety improvement for both bike and ped along Orchard Drive. Would construct between 183 South to 8300 South, tying into another project that has been identified with other funds. West Haven, this is a project that has been identified in a couple of discussions here. This particular request here will fill in the gap that will complete essentially from the DNRG there around the Hinckley Drive all the way up to the Weber River. Currently, there are segments of the trail that come from the Weber River to about 2200 South, and there's funding identified to come from the DNRG up to 1800 South. And this $200,000, along with other funds that have been programmed, will fill that gap, completing this trail segment from the DNRG all the way up to the Weber River. The next project is was a request. This is on the front lines. Currently, the way the frontline bike tracks are is those who've used bikes on there is you've got a spot for about nine bikes and you load them in and they're parallel to the car. The request is to put angled parking that will allow alternated or, well, it'll allow the bikes to come off without having to be lifted over other bikes. It'll also increase the number of bikes to be able to 16 on a particular vehicle rather than just the nine. Another request is you may be well familiar with is the bike counters, and this was for up in Davis and Weber County. The requested amount was $465,000. There wasn't that much available, so there was $200,000, which will be roughly about 20 to 25 bike counters per county. to help supplement the Strava data that was talked about earlier. Going into the Salt Lake area, we've got a gap for the Utah-Salt Lake Canal Trail Extension. This will complete the section from the Mountain View Corridor Trail to 6400 West. The next project is in Kearns. This will provide wayfinding and bike route directions with both pavement markings and signage. A continuation or an expansion of the Green Bike Program in the Salt Lake area. And then improvements to transit stops through Salt Lake City. I'm giving you a before and after over here on the right-hand side or left-hand side of the picture. And then also in the Salt Lake area, the request for the bike racks in the cars on the commuter link or front runner. And then Salt Lake also received funding towards their bike counters of $200,000. The funded request was $279,000, so this will be roughly about 50 counters to distribute throughout the Salt Lake area. So that was all of the TAP projects that were recommended. So now to highlight some of those in the STP. So in the STP program, there were 6 projects recommended in the Ogden-Layton, 11 projects in the Salt Lake West Valley. Now, the STP funds, or surface transportation funds, have a significant more demand on those types of money. They accomplish a significant amount, but almost every project, with the exception of one in the STP program, have active transportation components in that project. Two, for example, the first one, well, that's the end. The first one here would be up in Plain City. This is a project along 3600 West. If you're familiar with, it's a fairly narrow road. There's an LDS ward house on one side, there's a large elementary school on the other, and there's no sidewalk anywhere along there. And all of the children from the surrounding areas that are not driven there because there's no sidewalks are walking in the road to get there. This project will reconstruct this facility, widen the facility, add shoulders, curb gutter, and sidewalks, tying into existing sidewalks that are on perpendicular streets. The next project then to highlight is in Sandy City. This one here actually widens the intersection at Siegel Lily and State Street. This will provide, this was identified as a UCAT's priority. This will widen the intersection here to the north, providing an additional right turn lane and allowing bike lanes through the intersection, providing access for the bike route to the east and to the west on this particular facility. So as you go through and look through each of those projects identified in the STP program, you can see the components that exist there for active transportation. Now, maybe in the CMAQ, there were 5 projects recommended in the Ogden-Layton for the full $3 million available, 7 in the Salt Lake area. One that was highlighted here is an expansion of the Green Bike Hub in Ogden City. Phase 1 was programmed last year. This would extend or be Phase 2. The intent here was the initial request came in the TAP program for Phase 2. Those funds would have come before Phase 1 was completed. So it was recommended that we add additional CMAQ funds to the end of the program to allow this project to build in sequence, as well as potentially accomplish all that we need to in Phase 2 with Phase 1. And then the expansion, again, there were CMAQ funds that were recommended for the Green Bike in the Salt Lake area. Now, some of the other projects that are identified there, Vanpool Rideshare, for example, they're not really active transportation by themselves. But if by providing that type of a service, it allows someone an opportunity to take that resource, go into town to work, and then perhaps use the Green Bike or other resources. And so all of these projects kind of dovetail, but we don't count those as active type transportation projects. So out of all of the areas, so this is the Ogden-Layton urban area, and the green dots were day 1, and the blue dots were day 2 in the field reviews, and the red here and the yellow here in the Salt Lake area. Well, out of all of the projects that were programmed, right now, with the estimates that we're able to go through, and which will be firmed up once the regional council approves the project, there's roughly 20 to 30% of the funds, and there's more than $47 million programmed this year that will have active transportation components. It's quite a bit of money. And so it has been very successful. There's been a demand, and it's being something that's being watched as the projects are being programmed and prepared. And so my compliments to all of the cities, to UDOT and UTA, but those would be the projects that were recommended for the 2018-2023 TIP.
Thank you very much, Ben. We have a couple more presentations. We know that some of you need to leave right at 10:30, and so that is fine and certainly understandable. We will now go to Scott, and then Bill will go to you.
So I'm going to do just 1 minute on this. We asked you in the last meeting, we had you keypad poll on some questions that we were using to help us develop our 2019 to 2050 regional transportation plan and the 2050 Wasatch Choice vision for our region. And I just wanted to show you what the results of our keypad polling and our online survey were and how these results are being consistent across the board. So we asked 6 questions in keypad polling. The online survey roped these last 2 into 1. So this is a little bit different, but the question about sidewalks was worded slightly differently. It turns out that across the region, between the scenario workshops, which were local community driven, the ATC members, and then the online survey, the number one priority for the region is multi-use paths or trails separated from traffic, with on-street bicycle routes with greater separation being the first one for the ATC members, which doesn't necessarily surprise me, as this is a group of folks who typically ride on the road. I think a greater percentage of you guys than maybe the elected officials across the region. Now, at the bottom, what we saw, the lowest priority was a tie between wider multi-use sidewalks. Our example that we used for that was North Temple, and then on-street bicycle lanes adjacent to traffic. And what we were hearing from communities is that we don't not want bike lanes. It's not like we'll turn a bike lane away. It's that when the opportunity presents itself for a greater level of separation, that's what we desire. And we understand that this is a stepping stone thing, where we might end up with a bike lane that turns into something greater, as is the case in Salt Lake City. 3rd South and 2nd West, you know, wouldn't be the protected facility they are today without the network of standard bike lanes across the city that built up that demand. So we'll keep you posted on what these results are over time and as we develop that preferred scenario for the regional transportation plan, but just wanted to follow up since you guys were part of the keypad polling, and, you know, have any questions, 10 seconds, or we'll move on to the other if there's any questions, comments.
I would also add, during the conversation at the workshops with the cities and the counties, you know, they acknowledge that, you know, funding normally is an issue or right-of-way constraints. But again, that it was a pretty consistent throughout the 10 workshops that we held, that separation and safety were the biggest concerns. And I think that hits that 60% of users that are interested but concerned. And I think that's the direction we'd like to go, but you know, it doesn't always work out where you'll have the right-of-way or the ability to fund a separated facility, and we've got to remain flexible in, you know, putting in bicycle facilities, striped bicycle lanes or whatever, you know, when we can, or if that's what we can get for now. You know, I just think of Ogden City's bicycle master plan. They have 2 projects on, one on Wall and one on Harrison Boulevard that right now there's no right-of-way for a separated facility, but in the plan it calls for that as a future project, but right now, you know, they would take a striped bicycle lane or whatever they could get, so it kind of could be incremental. And there's just remain flexible. I think when you work on these, that, you know, it's not black or white. You know, there's some gray area in between, and you can incrementally, you know, get those projects moved forward to a separation. They'll work with land owners and development as things change along the corridor, and it might take a decade or more, you know, who knows. So.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I just have a couple of quick things on the National Bike Summit. There were a handful of us from Utah that attended a couple months ago. I just wanted to give you kind of the highlights. We met with Senator Hatch's staff as well as Representative Love's staff, and kind of the big takeaway from them was there are still a lot of positions that have not yet been appointed at the USDOT, so things on the transportation front, at least from their perspective, are moving pretty slowly. They said they call up offices and they say, we would love to tell you about that, but we can't give you any policy perspective on it. But if I could, I would tell you this. So they're kind of saying a lot of things off the record. So I think in the next couple of months, we'll know more about the general direction of the DOT. And our big ask at the National Bike Summit with those representatives was if there is going to be a big infrastructure investment, that active transportation be included in that. And they all seemed fairly receptive to that as a concept, but receptivity is different from it actually happening. And then the last thing, just kind of one of the main things from the National Bike Summit that I think we always need to keep in mind is how we're planning with equity in mind. I think we have a tendency across the country and in Utah to not think about minorities, underrepresented populations, people who are riding bicycles out of necessity, and how we better plan for those people. So just something for us to keep in mind as a whole.
Thank you very much. Is there anything really pressing from one of you here for the last moment or two?
Just real quick, Mayor. I just wanted to make sure before everybody takes off that I wanted to formally introduce Helen Peters, who's just come on to the Salt Lake County family. She has an extensive background, not only in transportation, but land use and community planning, and we're really great. It's a great addition. We're very pleased to have her.
Thank you, George. Anything else?
I have one last thing. The important dates on the bottom of the agenda have changed for the map tours. The Southwest Davis County Legacy Trail is still torn up. It has not been put back down yet. So we're bumping the Murray Midvale Map Tour to June 14th in conjunction with the ATC meeting. The ride is supposed to start out at the Murray Central Station, so the IHC confluence of commuter rail, front runner, and we're currently looking for a location out there. So UTA has police office that we might be able to go to. Otherwise, it might be an outdoor meeting like we did with Jim Price. And watch that time and date too. Murray's trying very hard to get their city council involved, and that might bump up the time of the ride earlier than normal. Normally we'd start about 10:30. So watch that start time on the meeting. It might be 8 o'clock or so, and then it'll be a short meeting prior to a bike ride around Murray Midvale.
Great. Okay. Seeing nothing else, we remind you the next meeting is June 14th, and we will adjourn. And thank you for your attendance and participation here. Appreciate it very much.